Shantratas, Antratas, Chidram, Desha, Kalartha, Vastuta, Sarva, Karoti, Vastuta, Sarva, Anu Sankirtana, Tapa, Mantratas Tantrachas, Tantratas Chachidram,
Mantratas Tantrachas Chidram,
Deja Kalarha Vastuta,
Deja Kalarha Vastuta,
Sarvam Karoti Nishchidram,
Sarvam Karoti Nishchidram,
There may be discrepancies in pronouncing the mantras and observing the regulative principles, and moreover, there may be discrepancies in regard to time, place, person, and paraphernalia. But when your lordship's holy name is chanted, everything becomes faultless. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has recommended Harir Nam, Harir Nam, Harir Nam Eva Kevalam Kalo Nasjeva 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 Gatir Anyata. In this age of quarrel and hypocrisy, the only means of deliverance is chanting the holy name of the Lord. There is no other way. There is no other way. There is no other way. Brihannaradiya Purana 38:126. In the age of Kali, it is extremely difficult to perform Vedic ritualistic ceremonies or sacrifices perfectly. Hardly anyone can chant the Vedic mantras with perfect pronunciation or accumulate the paraphernalia for Vedic performances. Therefore, the sacrifice recommended in this age is Sankirtan, constant chanting of the holy name of the Lord. Yajyai Sankirtana Prayer Yajanti Hi Sumedasa. Srimad Bhagavatam 11.5.29. Instead of wasting time performing Vedic sacrifices, those who are intelligent, those who possess good brain substance, should take to the chanting of the Lord's holy name and thus perform sacrifice perfectly. I have seen that many religious leaders are addicted to performing yajñas and spending hundreds and thousands of rupees for imperfect sacrificial performances. This is a lesson for those who unnecessarily execute such imperfect sacrifices. We should take the advice of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Yagyer, yagyai, sankirtana prayer, yajanti hi sumedasa. Although Shukracharya was a strict Brahmin, addicted to ritualistic activities, he also admitted, nischidram anusankirtanam tava. My Lord, constant chanting of the holy name of your Lordship makes everything perfect. In Kali Yuga, the Vedic ritualistic ceremonies cannot be performed as perfectly as before. Therefore, Srila Jiva Goswami has recommended that although one should take care to follow all the principles in every kind of spiritual activity, especially in worship of the deity, there is still a chance of discrepancies, and one should compensate for this by chanting the holy name of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In our Krishna consciousness movement, we therefore give special stress to the chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra in all activities. Mantratas Tantratas Chidram Deshakalarha Vastuta Sarvam Karoti Nishchidram Anusankirtanam Tavam. There may be discrepancies in pronouncing the mantras and observing the regulative principles. And, moreover, there may be discrepancies in regard to time, place, person, and paraphernalia. But when your Lordship's holy name is chanted, everything becomes faultless.
Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stakatam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadama Am Dadati Swamadati Kam Vanchakat Charuvias Chakri Vasidhya Vyavacha Paditanam Pavanya Vyo Vaishnava Vyo Namoha Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Sri Vasudhi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
And so this is a very important statement, and it's very important not just as a statement, but in terms of the fact that the person making the statement is a really kind of special person in this particular regard. Srila Prabhupada mentions here in the purport that Shukracharya, he was really a person who was very much attached to these ritualistic sacrificial performances, fire sacrifice, and other ritualistic performances accompanied by the chanting of different Vedic mantras, these types of ritualistic performances which are a very major part of the Vedic tradition. They always have been a very major part of the Vedic tradition, and because they are generally connected or oftentimes connected with materialism, achieving some sort of fruit of result for one's sense gratification, and because they're very colourful and attractive, at least when they're nicely done, so people, materialistic people, the ordinary people of this world, they can easily become attracted by these things. In fact, in Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna makes that type of reference earlier on in the third chapter, if I'm not mistaken, or if not in the fourth. He says that one should not be attracted by the flowery words of the Vedas. That the Vedic literatures in so many ways very nicely are presenting the prospect of increased material enjoyment through these materialistic, fruitive, ritualistic types of activities. So they're presenting very nicely that prospect. And people who are materialistic or even somewhat materialistic, they could very easily become distracted from the possibility of taking to Krishna consciousness by these things, and the ways in which they're done, the goals which they're presenting or offering, like this. And in this way, the whole purpose of the Vedic tradition can be subverted. In fact, when Narada Muni visited Srila Vyasadeva, as described in the fourth and fifth chapters of the first canto of the Bhagavatam, Srila Vyasadeva had, he thought at least, finished his compilation of the Vedic literatures. He thought he had finished it with the completion of Vedanta Sutra, which is a type of summary of all the Vedic literatures, bringing out the main points and bringing out what is really the goal. What is the real ultimate point, what the Vedic literatures are trying to bring us to. So Srila Vyasadeva, he did that. He compiled Vedanta Sutra, and he thought that in doing that, he had completed his task. And in completing that task, he felt that the natural result should be, seeing the task was now over, and Vedanta Sutra, after all, means the end of knowledge. There's nothing to be learnt beyond that. So, naturally, Srila Vyasadeva expected that
having achieved that, the natural result or part of the natural result should be complete satisfaction, total satisfaction of having actually successfully completed the mission of life. However, he found that he was not satisfied. He was not satisfied. So then Narada Muni came and explained to him that even though in certain respects you have drawn out the ultimate goal of the Vedas, but if you have not really established it very clearly and strongly and vividly, so that people will see and the conclusion will be there in a very clear and decisive fashion, that the goal is Krishna consciousness, pure devotional service. This is the goal, and other things are not the goal. They may, for some people, be steps in approaching the goal, but they're not at all the goal. The goal is only pure devotional service, pure Krishna consciousness, and that is all. So Narada Muni explained to Srila Vyasadeva that your problem, why you're not feeling so satisfied, is because you haven't done that. In other words, you haven't immersed yourself in pure Krishna consciousness. Just pointing in the direction a little, somewhat indirectly, and not really becoming absorbed, just indicating. So when it's like that, then the result will not be that complete satisfaction which naturally comes when one is fully absorbed in pure devotional service. In fact, we know that Narada Muni actually mildly chastised Srila Vyasadeva that you have presented this same part of the Vedas, the fruit of activities part, Karmakandya part, you have presented this too attractively. People, if they have any inclination towards materialism, they're going to become distracted by this and will not progress on to pure devotional service. So in this way, Narada Muni told him that you've actually done a great disservice. You've done a great disservice, so you have to go back and complete the task properly. So then Srila Vyasadeva compiled Srimad Bhagavatam, which is very so clearly and from beginning to end, and everywhere in between is simply pointing out Lord Krishna and devotional service to him. Yes, so Shukracharya, he was one of those people then, and we saw that already, how attached he was materially and how much that meant to him and how little Krishna consciousness meant to him. Krishna consciousness was totally dispensable. If it interfered with achieving any material objective, then one could just put it aside just like that and it wouldn't be a problem at all. If it helped, though, or perhaps if it didn't interfere with one's materialistic objectives, then it might be all right. But otherwise, we don't need it. We don't want it. Throw it away if it interferes with our material life. This was Shukracharya. But here, Shukracharya is making the point that all these ritualistic activities, they're very difficult. There's so many fine details, fine points, and if you don't get them all right, then you will undermine the whole effort and turn the whole thing into a waste of time. It's like that. Just a waste of time. Dharamas, what is that? Shrama eva hi kevalam. Shrama eva hi kevalam. That verse is stating so emphatically that simply a waste of time, only a waste of time. It's not that it has some few good points, but otherwise it's not good. It's simply a waste of time, only from beginning to end, and it's nothing else. Nothing other than a waste of time. Yes, so Shukracharya, the fact that such a statement could be made by Shukracharya is quite amazing. And it says a lot, actually. If someone who was adhering to a certain philosophy, if they then turn around and reject that and accept another philosophy which previously they were opposed to, then that in itself is a strong statement. It's a statement which is at least indicating that the rejected philosophy is definitely inferior to the philosophy which has been accepted. Yeah, so that's a very important statement, that Shukracharya, who was such an ardent materialist, just so completely dedicated to achieving material goals, such a person could make this point that actually the chanting of the holy names, in other words, devotional service in general, and particularly that devotional service which is the chanting of the holy names, is in just in a different category, a far higher category than all these other ritualistic activities and so on. This is a very important point, that the holy names are so important, devotional service is so important. And even someone like Shukracharya is accepting that. So it is making this point very emphatically, actually, in terms of these activities being a waste of time. If there's some discrepancy, if things are not really, even some small detail is not properly seen to. This is drawn out, of course, right at the beginning of Srimad Bhagavatam, where Shanaka Rishi and the sages in Naimisharanya, they were performing a great thousand-year sacrifice, fire sacrifice. Also, same ritualistic, materialistic activity. They are performing this thousand-year sacrifice, fire sacrifice, in order to slow down the onslaught of Kali Yuga, so that at least for 1,000 years or some period of time, Kali Yuga would not be able to take hold so strongly, and the conditions would not be so bad, so the people would not have to suffer so much. Their motivation was to save the people from suffering. So they performed this fire sacrifice for some time. And then Suta Goswami, as described in the first canto, Suta Goswami came upon the scene. And then Suta Goswami, who was already famous as the great Shastric authority, when Vyasadeva divided up the Veda, all the different texts that made up the one Veda, he divided them up, and then they were compiled into different departments. Then Suta Goswami, he was placed in charge of the Puranas. So he is the authority on the Puranas, all the Puranas. And including Srimad Bhagavatam, he also at least eventually spoke Srimad Bhagavatam. So already, because Suta Goswami had already compiled the other Puranas, so Suta Goswami was famous as a great Vedic authority and authority on what is right and what is wrong according to Shastra. So Shonaka Rishi, he recognized Suta Goswami and knew him, that this man, he can help us. Because even though they are performing that fire sacrifice as nicely as they could, and they were highly qualified, they themselves were great authorities, all of them, Shonaka and all the others, they're all great souls, very highly educated in Vedic knowledge and how to do all these things very nicely and so on. So even though they were doing their thousand year sacrifice, they had been doing it for some time,
And they had been doing it very nicely, practically as nicely as it could be done, at least in that day and age, early Kali Yuga. But still, the results were not coming. Still the results were not coming. And why were the results not coming? Well, the point is made here that in performing these ritualistic activities, it's very easy for discrepancy to come in. It's hardly possible to avoid it. Prabhupada mentions here in the purport that the mantras have to be chanted perfectly. Pronunciation has to be perfect. And it's not like, you know, sometimes what we do. We're chanting some mantras and somehow we make some mispronunciation, so then we repeat the word and carry on, or repeat the line and carry on, or something. It doesn't work like that. You make one mistake in one line, one mispronunciation, get one word wrong or mixed up or something, and that's out. That's it. You're out. The whole sacrifice is out. Yeah, there'll be like a gap, some significant defect in the result. So anyway, these sages, this is the point that Shonaka is making here, that if there's discrepancy, it brings great problems. And it's so hard to avoid discrepancy. Particularly, we can understand in the Kali Yuga. So those sages, headed by Shonaka, who even though they were very qualified, they were doing that sacrifice as nicely as they could, but we can understand that still discrepancy was coming in. Somehow, even though it's not really described very clearly what they were doing wrong, but something was going wrong. Because of that, they were not getting a result, as we mentioned. Or as Shonaka said to Sutta, that we're not getting any result, but we're getting one result, that our faces are becoming blackened by the smoke. But beyond that, we're not getting any result. We're not getting any result at all. How did they know that? Well, one thing was, they were not feeling the result. They were not feeling that we're absorbed now on some elevated level, transcendental level, or even some elevated level of the mode of goodness, where one becomes joyful and happy, at least by material standards. We're not feeling that. We're just going on and on and on, and really the only thing that is clearly happening is that our faces are becoming blackened by the smoke. So you please tell us, you're a great authority, you tell us what to do. So then Sutta told them, basically, that you hear and chant about Krishna. First of all, you hear from me, Srimad Bhagavatam. Krishne Swadamo Pagate Dharma Gyana Dvisaha Kalo Nashtam Drishamesha Puranarko Dunodita. That now that Krishna has left for his own abode, and taken with him the principles of religion and everything. Now, where will we find him and where will we find religion? In the pages of Srimad Bhagavatam. That is where Krishna is to be found. That is where religion is to be found. Otherwise, Kali Yuga is too much. It's too much. Even if you're as expert as you could be, like Shonaka, still, it's too much, and you'll not be able to be successful. However, Shukracharya is making the point here, and such an important point. Srila Prabhupada repeats it in the purport, that where the holy names are chanted, not only is there not really this problem of discrepancy, but if there's already discrepancy in other activities you're doing, that chanting will make up for that. So not only is it so potent and pure that it can stand unaffected by Kali Yuga in its own right, but it can also protect other activities from the influence of Kali Yuga. So here in the purport, Srila Prabhupada refers to Jiva Goswami, who makes the point that we may do other activities, particularly, most importantly, we may do deity worship. And we may do other activities also in Krishna consciousness. But they have to be accompanied by the chanting of the holy names. They have to be. The chanting of the holy names, Krishna Katha, glorification of Krishna, this transcendental sound vibration has to be there. Otherwise, even deity worship, and what to speak of these other fire sacrifices and so on, they will not have that effect. They will not be protected. They'll not be protected from the onslaught of Kali Yuga. They'll become infiltrated and fall down. And we see in India, Vrindavan and places like that, people are doing deity worship. And they take it, in some cases, they take it very seriously. And they're trying to do it quite meticulously, at least in some cases. But because the chanting of the holy names is not there, because the glorification of Krishna is not there as the focal point, then everything is gradually deteriorating in all respects. Everything is deteriorating, and they're deteriorating. It's like that. So this chanting of the holy names, glorification of Krishna, it has to be there. And it will protect the other activities and give them potency. It'll do like that. Just like I've noticed that, you know, when fire sacrifices are done, even our devotees do them at weddings. Particularly, I've seen it several times at weddings. People just lose interest and go out. Or else they just sit there and sort of, you know. But they're not absorbed. They're not into it. But when there's a devotee who, while doing the fire sacrifice, can present it very nicely in an attractive way and present Krishna consciousness very nicely, then the people actually become inspired. So, like that. The glorification of Krishna is giving support to that activity, which otherwise it just doesn't have sufficient to really make an impact on the heart of the conditioned soul. So we should be clear on this. And the fact that Shukracharya, of all people, who was coming out just a little while ago as being terribly materialistic and very offensive, actually, to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, to devotional service, to the devotees, to Bali Maharaj, who's a devotee. Even Shukracharya, he's now understood. He's understood. So that's very significant, that he now is enthusiastically supporting this point and accepting this point. So, of course, the obvious question would arise that in our preaching, should we do these things? And it's a good question, and there are differing opinions in my experience. There are differing opinions. You know, at the very best, if we were to do it, at least not in a situation where Prabhupada taught us to do it, at the very best, if we do it in some other situation, it might be part of a greater program which has a deeper type of Krishna consciousness within it, at the very best. Anyway, even at the very best, we would have to watch out, because it is sort of encouraging anatha. It's encouraging anatha, that the activity in itself is really very important.
where actually the activity in itself is not very important. But the chanting of the holy names, that's very important. Without that, one cannot progress. But without fire sacrifice, you can progress. You can progress by the chanting of the holy names. Any comments or questions? Puranas were already done. And the Bhagavad Purana was already done. There were already 18 Puranas. So Srimad Bhagavatam was done and it replaced the Bhagavad Purana. That's described. So we have to read it carefully to see what is being said, but that's clearly what is being said. And Jiva Goswami makes the point of Tattva-Sandhava, that there was already a Bhagavad Purana, there are already 18 Puranas. But the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is also known as the Bhagavad Purana now, it replaced that Bhagavad Purana. So the Bhagavad Purana was, you know, not as Krishna conscious at all as Srimad Bhagavatam. Therefore Vedanta Sutra came after it, which was meant to be the conclusion. So Narada Muni, what he did, he told Vyasadeva to go into meditation, which, you know, it's mentioned, but there's no detail of how he did it and or what the particular type of meditation was. I mean, in terms of the practical activities. But the fact that he went into the meditation and then within it realized the Srimad Bhagavatam, that's mentioned, that's described. And then he taught it to Shukadeva. Srila Prabhupada ki.
Antananishwarapi san. Prakritam samadishtaya. Sambhavam yatma mayaya. That although I am unborn, actually, he's transcendental. Beyond all these considerations and different things that are here within this world and which are controlling us. So he is Aja, he is unborn. Although I am unborn and my transcendental body never deteriorates again, he's not subject to the influence of material nature. His body doesn't deteriorate like our bodies are deteriorating. Krishna says that despite that, I still appear within this world. I still appear. But when I do appear, Krishna says, Sambhavami Atma Mayaya. I appear in my own original form, in terms of my own original nature. This is Krishna. This is God. He's not forced like us to appear in a certain family. None of us remember choosing, do we? But I think this time when I take birth, I want to take birth in Flamingo Heights, in flat 44 or something. This is where I want to appear. So we don't recall making some choice like that. Just we found ourselves here, that's all. Somehow we took birth. It was not under our control. It was not according to our choice. But when Krishna appears, it is according to his choice. He appears on his own terms as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And then when he, after he has appeared, and when he is amongst us and performing his activities, then the activities he performs, they are also beyond the control of material nature. Just like his appearance, when Krishna appeared, the description is there in the Bhagavatam, first of all, by his own choice and by his own arrangement, Krishna, first of all, entered the mind of his father, so to speak, father. He entered the mind of his father. Then he transferred himself to the mind of his mother. Then he transferred himself to her womb. This is all going on under his own control, by his own decisions. So he arranged everything like that, and then finally, after a little while, when he chose, then he just stepped out. He didn't come out in the way that everybody else does, the way that we did. You know, it's all, you may be now some big important person, a major member of society around Tongat, but when you appeared, you weren't so, it wasn't so impressive. Somehow or other you came out of your mother's womb, and what happened? The doctor picked you up by your legs, smacked you on the rear end, and you started crying, isn't it? This is the classic idea, at least, that we've witnessed. So, and now you may be Mr. Important in Tongat, but it wasn't always like that. Anyway, when Krishna appeared, he just appeared. He just stepped out. Not only that, but he was fully dressed and with ornaments, earrings, necklaces, bangles, and so on, all of solid gold, when he stepped out of his mother's womb. So, this is beyond the control of material nature. He is acting as he chooses, not being forced by material nature to take birth in a certain situation, under certain circumstances, and just go through, be subjected to so much under the material nature. So Krishna appeared like that, and beyond the material nature. And then he performed so many activities, which also demonstrated the fact that he is beyond material nature. Just like, for example, Krishna, if you look on the cover of Bhagavad Gita, I hope you all have a copy of Bhagavad Gita. You know, every good Christian, what do they have at home? Every single last one of them, without a single exception. What do they have at home? They have their Bible. Of course they do. You can absolutely guarantee. Every good Muslim, what do they have? You bet. Every last one. You will not find one who doesn't. You can practically guarantee. So, Bhagavad Gita, you should all have a copy of Bhagavad Gita at home. It's very important, very important. Something solid, some solid information. If you haven't got one, please get one before we finish our program. So, if you have your copy of Bhagavad Gita, if you look on the cover, then you see Krishna driving the chariot. And Krishna, he looks like a young man. A young man, right in the prime of life, at the peak of his strength, very good-looking, youthful, vitality and attractiveness. But do you know how old Krishna was, so to speak? How many years he had been present on the planet at that time when he spoke Bhagavad Gita? At that time that picture is depicting at the beginning of the battle. Do you know how many years he'd been on the planet? He had been on the planet 89 years. be good if you looked like that when you were 89, wouldn't it? If you reach 89. He looks like a young man, young fellow, maybe in his late teens even. So, what is going on? Well, what is going on is that Krishna, as we mentioned that verse, Aja, Ajopi son of Yayatma, I am unborn, Sambhavami Atma Mayaya, but still I appear in this world, but when I appear in my original transcendental form. So Krishna, his body doesn't age like our bodies age. He allowed his body to develop to the point of maturity, late teens or so, but then he stayed like that. And that's why on the cover of Bhagavad Gita, he looks like that. So who amongst us can do that? Would it be nice? Those of us who are a little, shall we say, more mature in years? Wouldn't it be nice if we could have stayed like 18 or 20 year olds or something like that, and being very strong and so on? But we can't do that. We cannot do that because we are under the control of material nature. But Krishna is not under the control. Rather, he is controlling. He is controlling the material nature. And he showed Arjuna that. If you look in Bhagavad Gita, in the 11th chapter, Krishna displayed his Virat Rupa, Vishwarup, this form of his in which we see how he is pervading the whole universe. God is pervading the whole universe. He is sustaining and maintaining the whole universe. So he showed Arjuna that in that universal form that's described in Bhagavad Gita in the 11th chapter. So, what to speak of being under the control of this world, but he is sustaining this whole world, and he showed that. So this is Krishna. And Krishna appears in many, many forms, different moods, different forms. Just like we have our different moods. When we're in our different moods, we look different, we dress different. If you're going to work, you dress in one way. If you're going to the beach, you dress in another way. If you're going to sleep, you dress in another way. If you're going to some big dinner party, you dress in another way. But Krishna, when he gets into different modes, he doesn't just dress differently, he manifests a different form. So therefore there are many forms of the Supreme Lord. And as it happens, on Tuesday, next week, just a few days away, that is the appearance day of Krishna in his form as Lord Chaitanya. So it's a very important day, this coming Tuesday, the 19th, the anniversary of when Krishna appeared as Lord Chaitanya. And what was the mood of Lord Chaitanya? What was the business, the mission of Lord Chaitanya? Well, his mood was to be helpful, to be kind and merciful to the fallen souls in this degraded age. It's a very degraded time, isn't it? Terrible. Just look at what's happening. In a few days, there may be war in Iraq, and who knows what's going to happen to life in general, even here in South Africa. So this is Kali Yuga. It's very difficult. Not a good time. But Krishna, because he's very merciful, so he appeared in a particular form to manifest that mercy. That is Lord Chaitanya. Krishna, in his merciful mood of trying to help us, the fallen conditioned souls struggling within this material world, by giving us a very easy process. not difficult. Anyone can do it. A child can do it. And we saw earlier, the children were doing it. Just chant the holy names, that's all. Just chant the holy names. You can do it anywhere, anytime. Anyone can do it. They're not even hard and fast rules. Maybe you can't pronounce it so nicely. Just like I came back yesterday, in fact. I was in India, in Mayapur, which is the place of appearance of Lord Chaitanya. So many devotees were gathered there, and there was a group of devotees from China. Not Hong Kong, not Taiwan, but mainland China, communist China. Beijing, Shanghai. But just an interesting thing that somehow or other, due to the culture and whatever it may be, but in the language of China, there is no letter R, as in Rama. There's no letter R. It doesn't exist. But rather, they use L. They use L. Somehow, the culture's developed like that. So what does the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra become then, in Chinese, or for a Chinese person? Hare Krishna. So you might think, oh, this is very strange. This is bad. How can they chant Hare Krishna when they can't pronounce an R and it comes out Hare Krishna? But the thing is, there are no hard and fast rules. So if one chants sincerely from the heart, then even if somehow it's not technically so expert or so perfect, but if the sincerity is there from the heart, then it'll act. And as they say, the proof is in the pudding. You have to look and see. Look at the person and see. Look at the chanter and see. Is this person developing spiritually? Is this person developing spiritual qualities? Giving up the material things, becoming absorbed in spiritual activity. What's going on in the person's life? That we want to see in order to understand, how is their chanting? Are they chanting nicely or not chanting nicely or practicing nicely? So we saw, these are such nice devotees from China. They are just wonderful. Just wonderful. So even though language is very different and pronunciation is a little unusual by our standards, but it's working because they're really trying sincerely to chant the holy name. So this is the mission of Lord Chaitanya. Give everybody a chance to approach him, to approach God, to make progress and get out of this material world. Go back home, back to Godhead. Do the simple process of chanting the holy names, which can be done by anyone. If done sincerely, anyone can do it at all. So we have a couple of questions here. In fact, we have two. So we'll just try and answer these questions, and then we'll carry on with the program. So, first of all, we have a technical question. What is the difference between Vedanta teaching and Krishna consciousness? If there's no difference, then why is it? Then why are there two different organizations? If there is a difference, please explain. Well, I don't know if you've heard of Vedanta. Our scriptures, Bhagavad Gita is part of a body of scriptures called the Vedic scriptures. The Vedic scriptures. And so there are many. There's so many books in that body of scriptures. Bhagavad Gita's there. Srimad Bhagavatam is there. There are four Vedas. So many Puranas, Upanishads, Itihasas. There are all sorts of literatures making up that body of the Vedic literatures. And at the end you get Vedanta. Vedanta. Veda refers to that body of scriptures, and anta means the end. It's meant to be the end of the Vedas. But there's a very interesting description in Srimad Bhagavatam that the author, Vyasadeva, the author who compiled all these Vedic literatures and then wrote Vedanta at the end, when he finished it, he wasn't feeling satisfied. You'd think he would be after compiling all this, the greatest knowledge, the most perfect knowledge existing, but he wasn't feeling satisfied. So the great devotee Narada Muni came and explained to him that even though in Vedanta you have summarized the teachings of the Vedas, but you have not really drawn out the essence of the Vedas sufficiently. And what is that? The essence is Krishna. Everything is coming from Krishna. Everything is related to Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Supreme Absolute Truth. So make it clearer. This is what Narada told Vyas. So he did that by writing Srimad Bhagavatam, which makes it very clear that the Absolute Truth, the goal of life, is Krishna. Service to Krishna is the perfection of life. So therefore, Krishna consciousness, which is based on Srimad Bhagavatam, that literature that Vyas compiled on the instruction of Narada after the Vedanta, Krishna consciousness is based on that, the final conclusion of the Vedic literatures. So it's a step beyond Vedanta. It's a step beyond Vedanta. So if you're interested, if you actually know something about these things, then we advise you, take that step yourself. Go a step beyond Vedanta, get into Srimad Bhagavatam, and get into Krishna consciousness. How to respond when some Hindus say that we should not positively criticize them, as they may be content just worshipping demigods? Yes, well, this is the philosophy of, you know, don't criticize me and I won't criticize you. You know, I may be anything, I could be a first class nonsense, but I won't criticize you, so don't you criticize me. Anyway, you know, the thing is that there are different standards. What about the drunkard lying in the gutter? If you ask him how is he says he's okay. What do you think? Do you think he is okay? Should you just say, oh fine, he thinks he's okay, I'll leave him? No. Drunkard in the gutter, you should try to help him. If you're a decent person and you see someone just wasted and lost in life, if you're a decent person, you have to try to help them. So of course that's an extreme example, but there are so many levels, but actually the goal, Krishna's goal in Bhagavad Gita, the goal in the Vedic literatures, is to bring everyone to the highest level. We have this human form of life. Why should we be satisfied with some substandard existence, just living like polished animals, eating, sleeping, mating, and defending? What's so glorious about that? The animals are eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. What's so wonderful about that? You may eat food bought from Checkers, the animals may eat the grass off the ground, but they're not dying of starvation, are they? They're eating. We may eat in a more sophisticated way, but the end result is not that different. We're sleeping in our house, on a bed. They are just lying on the ground. But when you're asleep, it doesn't really matter that much, does it? So, We are doing the same things. People are doing the same things as the animals in more polished ways, but that's not such a big deal, is it? Surely we can do better. So, in Krishna consciousness, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is directing us so strongly, improve your life, actually utilize the human form of life for achieving perfection. So, therefore, you know, if we point out a few shortcomings, then it's not just like criticism, like envy, but actually it's just a matter of trying to help. Krishna's trying to help. He's trying to clarify things for Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita. So it's not a matter of envious criticism. It's a matter of clarification. And that's what preaching means. Preaching means you have to try and clarify things to help people. And sometimes you may have to point out if people are doing something which is wrong or actually self-destructive. Does Kali Yuga have anything to do with the demigoddess Kali? No. There's Kali. Kali and Kali. They're two different people. Kali. Kali is a person. There's a person overseeing this degraded age. Duryodhana, if you've heard of him, who was the main rival in that battle of Kurukshetra. So Duryodhana, Prabhupada explains, he's a partial expansion of Kali, the personality of Kali Yuga, partial expansion. Yeah, so he's a demigod and Kali is an expansion of Durga. If Krishna rejects materialism, why is he adorned with jewelry? Well, there are different ways we could answer that. Prabhupada, you know, one time Prabhupada was asked, along similar lines, you know, if you're so spiritual, if you're not a materialist, why do you use aeroplanes? Prabhupada said, if we didn't use them, they'd be totally useless. If we don't use them in Krishna's service, in the service of God, they'd just be a total waste of time. So, Krishna, you know, he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He deserves the best. So we can give him jewelry. Actually, he's being merciful to the jewelry. And he makes the jewelry appear more beautiful. It doesn't make him look more beautiful. But he's the Supreme Lord, so he has the right. And then by him using those things, then they're properly situated. They have real value. Okay, let's see. Okay, one last question. What do you do with excess pictures of Lord Krishna, for example, from old calendars? Do you discard them or do you collect them? Well, what you do is, first of all, you know, when you go into the next year's calendar, you cut the old pictures out, stick them on the wall. Next year, do the same thing until you've covered all your walls, okay? Cover the ceilings too. It's just Krishna everywhere. When your house is full, there's just not another piece of space. Don't put them on the floor, of course. But, you know, practically anywhere else. When there's just no more space, give them to your friends. And have them do the same thing. And when your one friend has filled their house up in the same way, go to your next friend. All right? In other words, think a little creatively. Try and use these things nicely. Hare Krishna. Okay, so we'll finish here. Thank you all for listening very patiently, and we'll continue on with the program. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.